G'day there, Mick Meredith here, comedian, musician and podcaster, and I'm doing the opening spot on the Andy Social podcast. He's coming up in a minute, settle down. If you don't know me, Mick Meredith, I tell jokes and sing songs. I've put out a couple of tunes recently on Spotify, one called Rod, all about my girlfriend's love for another man. Oh yeah, that's funny, we all laugh about it. Another tune about turning 50 called Hitting the Half Century and Growing Old Disgracefully. So check them out on Spotify or whatever platform you listen to. Got some other projects coming up soon. A new song coming out called Where's the Effing Remote Control? I think we can all relate to that. But right now, tune your ears in to the Andy Social Podcast. Cheers, big ears.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to my podcast, my little podcast here, Andy Social Podcast, 5.5 years strong. And the reason why it is still chugging away is because of Patreon. Patreon.com/AndyDowling. It is one of the best ways to support this podcast. It is the reason why Andy Social exists in 2021 and the reason why I'm doing two episodes a week now. It's ramped up. I'm firing on all cylinders. It's absolutely fantastic. And it's because of this community that continues to build on Patreon. So thank you so much to everybody who gets behind Patreon. It's patreon.com/AndyDowling. Supports us from only $1 a month. Dirt cheap. Set and forget. You won't even notice it. And if you want access to the exclusive Patreon podcast episode that comes out every Tuesday morning, 6 a.m. Sydney time, then there are additional tiers to get access to that as well. Consider it. It's a great way of supporting the podcast. And I'll love you a long time. Thank you very much. Patreon.com/AndyDowling. Ahoy, episode 263 of the Andy Social Podcast. That's my podcast, by the way, folks. How you doing? My name's Andy, and we're here. We're here right now. This podcast is nestled in your ear canal, ready to fire away, and this episode is with Julia Wilson. Julia is a comedian out of Sydney. She's been around the comedy traps for close to 20 years now, and it must have been a couple of weeks ago, Julia caught up with me at my place here in Piedmont, and we had a bit of a chinwag. And I've got to say, folks, strap yourselves in for this one. This is a wild ride. This is not for the faint-hearted. I had an absolute ball talking to Julia, but this is such a fun chat. I absolutely loved it. If you know Julia's comedy, there will be no surprises here whatsoever. But if you don't, if you're not familiar with Julia, just get ready for this one. It's fun. It's a fun one. You can follow Julia on Facebook by searching Julia Wilson. Of course, I'll have everything in the show notes over at andysocial.net and andydowling.net. But enough crapping on from me. Please enjoy this really, really great chat with Julia Wilson. Just you mentioned before we were talking about sort of not being able to do a lot and everyone's stuck at home and people going a bit batshit crazy. I've been going batshit crazy. I've had a rant about this just recently. There's a guy directly over here. There's a balcony next to us. And he moved in maybe a couple of months ago. And I was walking up the street here, a little alleyway, and he was out on the balcony. He had a banjo, and he had his feet up, and like kind of Deliverance in a way. And I just looked up and just saw him, and I thought,
Urban Deliverance.
And I thought, oh, it's kind of cool, you know, it was a sunny day, it was a nice day, and I sort of thought, bit different, you know, but why not? Anyway, that was cool, and then a couple of days later, he was out there again during the day, and it was fun. But then the last few weeks, Sunday night, midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., he's out there with a fucking banjo playing with his mates drinking.
Oh, nope.
And he starts singing, and it sounds like something out of like a Triple J Byron Bay Blues Fest hipster sort of thing. I'm just
so much nope.
I'm like, and I'm lying there in bed.
Have you not murdered him yet?
Oh, well, that's so. One night I opened this up and I just yelled out, "Shut up!" And he stopped, and then that was it. And I thought, great, he's got the picture. He's connected to the dots and realized that he's being obnoxious and a rude cunt. So I thought, all right, great. Then like 2 nights later, he's back out there again. And so I'm just lying there and Jess is like, just leave it. Think about how many people are living in this area. Somebody else will surely get sick of this. No, not yet.
Wow.
So I'm like ready to like...
There's a whole theory behind that. Behind like if you... I think it's in one of Malcolm Gladwell's books. about, I think it's in Blink, where if you're walking down a street and you get attacked and it's a country road and there's one house,
yeah,
there's a massive chance that person's calling the cops because they know they're the only person on that right. street. You're actually safer getting attacked in a little like isolated area. Whereas if you get attacked here, literally everyone's like, someone else will call the cops. I don't have to get involved. Someone else will call the cops. Like it's, I reckon you need to be the guy on the country
I
road.
I need to lead.
Yeah.
I
who just goes, lead. Fuck you. I'm fucking calling the cops or the landlord or I'm going to go over there and stick that banjo right up your ass. Like,
And I think a day later I was out there again and it was during the day and he was out there with his banjo and I felt like just stopping and going, oi!
Yeah.
Fucking what are you doing?
This is the time of the day, cunt. Yeah. Do it at midnight and I will end you.
And I'm getting closer and closer and I'm not a confrontation guy, but
so that's my go-to. Like yeah. straight off, I'm just like, fuck's sake, I'm trying to sleep.
I need you to hang around here. A bit
yeah,
more.
Yeah, I was just thinking, do you want me to pop over and say good day?
Yeah, oi! No, we'll open it. The window in a sec.
Why? Where's your fucking banjo now, cunt? But I've got an angry ex-bouncer here.
I think you're right, though. I'm assuming that everybody else is going to
yeah,
do something
and they're doing the same. There's like, a whole train, like sociological train of thought in
there
that.
There was a song, I mean, I'm not an R&B fan at all, but I remember there was a song in the 90s, I think it was Babyface or something like that. It was about domestic violence.
Oh, and that was rings
like,
a bell.
And it was, like, he was singing in the corridor and the lady was getting beaten up or whatever and everyone's sort of behind the closed door, too scared to call the cops or whatever or knock on the door themselves or something. And I've always had that in the back of my head because even around here in Piedmont, yeah, I mean, it's a top spot. It's really good. But I think that unit block over on the corner and then a little bit further down, there's like an integration of sort of housing as housing commission as well as just normal sort of residential or private owned or whatever. The amount of times paddy wagons are there and ambos and everything, and it's just mayhem. And especially like on the weekend, there's a couple of guys who just hang out in that corner there and they're just... they're loaded.
Oh, wow.
But you see people walking past and no one wants to stop. No one wants to, like, call or no one wants to do anything because they're just probably the same thing. They're thinking someone else will call.
Yeah. I remember the first weekend I moved to London, walking, like, through the middle of, like, the actual, like, right the middle of Soho. And a dude had passed out and was overdosing and people were just stepping over him.
Oh, really?
Like, actually physically stepping over him. And I was like, I know I'm new to town, but I can't. It's not in my DNA to just not... So I'm like, hey, buddy, like, checked. He's got a pulse, radio. Let's get him into the recovery position. And I called, 999, I think, over there? Called an ambulance and they were just like, yeah, radio, we'll send someone. And no one really gave a fuck. But it was like, it was just, you know, that kind of thing where you're like, fucking hell, this poor cunt's going to die. And people are literally like, oh, this is so inconvenient.
It's weird. I mean, even like, yeah, here in the city, you just walk past, you know, people sitting with their little signs and trying to collect money and things like that. And you do, you become desensitized to a lot of that stuff, you know, especially if you see it all the time. And yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Like, always, when I was living in London, I used to carry dog food, like little tins of dog food in my bag with me.
Yeah.
So when I saw people begging and it was always like, I need money for the dog.
Yeah.
Like, and you give them a tin of dog food. You could see the legit people versus the fuckers that were just trying to collect money. Because the legit people were like, thank you so much. It means my dog can eat tonight. And the other ones are like, I'd really prefer your money. And I just pick the dog food back up and go fuck yourself. Put it back in my bag. Fuck you. Fuck you for using the dog to try and get money. Fuck you. Fuck you.
My dad would, my parents live in Brizzy. And so he's always in the city working. And he'll walk through like Queen Street Mall or through the Valley and things like that. And there's always characters there. And so he'll get approached.
That's a nice way of saying it.
Yeah, characters. The local wildlife I sometimes call them. But he'll get approached by somebody and be like, "Oh, look, can I have a couple of bucks to go and buy a cheeseburger?" And my dad would be like, "Oh yeah, come with me. I'll go and buy you one."
Yeah.
And they're like, "No, don't worry about it. Like, just give me the $2. No, you want a cheeseburger? I'll get you a cheeseburger. Yeah, do you want?
I'll get you a whole meal.
I'll get you a couple if you want." And they go, "No, don't worry about it, mate. Don't worry." And they walk off. And I was like, "Oh, okay. You either wanted one or you didn't." So
absolutely,
there's a lot of that stuff. And
I think in terms of like confronting people on the street, like I would hate to know that like either of my parents were doing that. I'd be like, "What the fuck are you doing? You could get killed." Whereas I have no hesitation.
Yeah.
Just walk up, going, "Are you all right?" Like. And you either get like, actually, I need a handle. Go fuck yourself. All right, okay, go fuck yourself. It's probably the answer I was looking for. See you later.
But I think, I mean, from what I've gathered, you've been well and truly used to conflict and confrontation over the years anyway. So is it just second nature now that...
I think it was always second nature, to be fair. That's how I found the jobs.
Like, right, you just got naturally attracted to it.
Oh, no, I grew up, you know, fighting a lot as a kid, so you just fight. You just got to... I actually have a medical thing where I make twice as much adrenaline as most people.
Oh, wow.
So I see things happening Like, I can see an argument happening 100 metres away. Like, I hear a raise in a voice. So I hear, and I don't even realise I do it anymore. I've just got this lizard part of my brain that just goes, something's happening over there. And I also see trouble a mile off. So if I'm walking down the street, I'll go, this guy's going to have something to say. So I've already, like, I'm 100% ready.
Yeah, right.
Way before. And I don't even know I do it anymore. It's been 100 years and I just go, oh, rightio. But also things like, you know, when things start to escalate, when someone's giving it, go fuck you, blah, blah, you know, just a little drop of the shoulder or a little, like a hand being clenched, or that kind of stuff that people don't fight all the time would probably never see.
Not at all.
My lizard brain's like, you're about to, you know, block the left, block that, like, careful of the headbutt, like all that's like just running through my head. So it's been a long time since someone surprised me.
Yeah.
But I was laughing the other day that I was in Potts Point on the weekend, King's Cross, and a mate of mine's mum had passed away, and I had all these clothes in the car that she said, I just can't deal with going to the charity and saying, can you take, they're going to ask me questions about my mum and I just can't deal with it. I'm like, I'll get rid of them for you. And I've got like this issue with taking clothes to like Vinnie's and Salvo's and stuff where they sell them to people who, like, you're just giving rich people cheaper clothes, which I fucking just inherently disagree with.
Yeah.
So I was cruising around, I was having a chat to a mate of mine, I'm like, there's got to be a homeless shelter around here that actually gives. And they're like, yeah, fucking Wayside Chapel. And I was like, oh, fuck, of course.
Yeah.
So I drove down the little side street. And what I loved is I drive an old Valiant. And what I love is that as I'm driving through King's Cross and Potts Point, every single homeless person, low to the ground person, like original cross person, like waved at my car. And I waved back at every single one of them. And every single one of them knew, like, oh, we've bought in Potts Point. It used to be called King's Cross, but now it's Potts Point. Just like ignoring me, like, don't look at her. Everything's fine. Like, it really made me chuckle. Just that kind of, that perception of like who sees you and who doesn't. Because I think for me, the biggest insult that I can pay anybody is to not see them, to just completely ignore them and walk straight past. Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, like the guys that are loaded, are they dangerous? Lizard brain will tell me. And if they're not, just like, I just make eye contact, like, g'day, how you going? Like that kind of thing. Because often that just diffuses. I remember being in London, being followed from the tube station, just going, fucking beauty, because I was a bit angrier back then. And all you need to do is make eye contact early.
Yeah.
And they often just go, oh, nope, easier victims. And that's they right. just yeah. off to something else. Battle. Yeah, I used to play Who Would I Mug? when it, you know, you're sitting at a bus stop and I was bored or in the tube station and I would be just people watching and I'd be like, who would I mug? I'm like, oh, he'd get it for sure. Yep, I'd take her bag. Oh, fuck, he's just asking for it with his fucking iPod or phone or whatever it is out like that. Like I would play Who Would I Mug? And the people that you wouldn't mug are the people who are looking around, like paying attention rather than those kind of victim-y, like hunched shoulders, eyes down kind of.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because I think a lot of people think that by sort of diverting their eyes away or being hunched over or something like that, sort of keeping close to themselves.
No one notices you.
Yeah, like you're invisible. But if anything, you're a walking target.
Absolutely. The people who are looking for easy targets are like, there's one, got him.
Wow, yeah. And I guess that's the thing, like with a lot of people, they're never in a situation where they have to have confrontation. I mean, we're so lucky.
Absolutely.
And so you just don't even know. You don't even...
Yeah.
And so when it does happen, I mean, it's just such a... I mean, a lot of the time it's a fucking tragedy because they're not equipped to be able to handle it.
A, you never saw it coming. B, don't know how to deal with it. C, the fight or flight is actual, like, fright. They just stop. They completely freeze. Don't know what's going on. Whereas because lizard brain kicks in, I'm like, okay, I can see this. I can see what's happening here. And then luckily, you know, my brain goes into either diffuse or escalate depending what mood I'm in. I'm a far more, when I say that, I'm like, God, that makes you sound like an absolute thug. But I'm a much calmer person these days. But there was a solid 25 years from about 10 to 35 that I would just kick off for no reason. Not for no reason. That makes me sound like a bully. That's why I enjoyed being a bouncer because I enjoyed being able to, I'm like, oh, there's a giant guy trying to pick a little guy in a fight. I'm going to go fight that big guy.
Yeah,
or like there's, you know, there's one guy trying to fight five guys. I'm going to drag that one guy out because he's going to get killed. Like, that kind of thing where you just sort of like, it just, there's so few places that women are allowed to be acceptably violent in society that being a bouncer was one of them and playing I used to play American football that was another one where you just like you just get out of your system because women aren't allowed to really fire up without people like, oh, there's something wrong with her.
Well, I mean, even in those spaces, I mean, it's still not a, it's not a stereotypical place that you'd find a woman. I mean, you definitely see it these
much
days.
Much more these days. So I was a bouncer from 93 to 2003. I started comedy 2002. Yeah. So 10 years, and I never worked with another female bouncer the whole time.
Yeah, right.
Well. And I worked in live venues, which I fucking loved. Mm. I loved, like, I got paid, like, pretty well to stand side of stage and, like, make sure no one died in the mosh pit or made sure that, like, everyone who was meant to be there was, and anyone who wasn't meant to be there wasn't. And it just used to, I'm like, I can't believe I'm getting paid to stand in the middle of a mosh pit, catch people, put them down so they don't die. And, like, you know, I was just like, this is amazing. I got exposed to music I would never have heard of. I got to watch people like Lior, when he had five people coming to gigs, who's now like this internationally famous, you know, sort of acoustic dude. Mick Hart, who only passed away a couple months ago, watched him start and go. Machine Gun Fellatio, like Iota, all those guys from the ground up. That was amazing. And then seeing touring bands, like, I'm a massive punk fan, so you get like Agent Orange and Sprung Monkey those guys. I was just like, fuck, I'm getting paid to stand here and watch punk bands that I've been watching since I was a kid. I'm like, this is fucking great.
That must be so much better than doing a bouncer gig at a pub.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. So we used to have the agency that I worked for, we had the Sands at Narrabeen, live band venue. So you'd work like 6 till midnight, and then you'd have to finish midnight till 4 at a nightclub, and I'd just be like standing in the club going, like, I hate the music. Everyone's like, coked off their heads. It's fucking bullshit. Like, because like people that go see live bands, they smoke a couple of joints before they go in, they're chill, they want to see the band, they're having a great time. Fuckwits that go and hang out in a nightclub, like on the northern beaches, just chocked with ecstasy and coke, which makes them more confident, which is what they need. They need more confidence. And I would just be standing there going, I just want to fucking murder everybody. So, yeah, I mean, it used to make me laugh that I'd loved the first half of the night, and I would always volunteer. Like, I'll stay and watch the band pack up. I'll stay and lock up. Don't immerse me in the nightclub bit.
Yeah.
Because the fights were always like 10 blokes shoving each other. I'm like, look, if no one's going to throw a punch, can you all just go outside? Like, just, you know, that kind of like...
Just all chesting each
they
other.
They were, just all of that. It used to make me laugh because I could hear that David Attenborough voice in the back. Oh, and the male of the species has been challenged, but he's actually a gutless wonder and he has nothing to say, but his friend has called him some derogatory term that's questioning his sexuality. Like, it just used to make... I would be cacking myself inside my own head just going, look at these fuckheads. And literally, if you put them out in a rough pub anywhere else in Sydney, they'd get flogged and killed.
That's it. I mean, they're gravitating towards a place where they feel confident and they've got the upper hand. But I think it's like when you compare to like a nightclub or even a lot of pubs to a gig, it's like the intention of why they're out in the first place.
Absolutely.
Is, you know, for a lot of the nightclubs, and yeah, okay, stereotyping, but you know, a lot of them are going out to either pick up or they're there with the boys, you know, Saturdays for the boys.
With an eye.
And trying to start something, get a bit of action, you know. And
whereas you go into a band, you're going to see the band.
Well, you're going to see a band. And, yeah, you get pockets of those, you know, little characters.
But they tend to, I find, especially live music audiences tend to self-police. Like, those fuckheads don't last.
No.
That's what I loved about the Sands at Narrabeen and the Fishos at Manly were the two venues that I worked at a lot. And they're kind of iconic Sydney, like, stage venues. And they were both pretty rough. And if the crowd didn't like you, you didn't stay. It used to make me laugh. The other psychology part of that is that on the very first weekend you went to work in any of those venues, someone would pick you in a fight. And if you won, you never had to fight again the whole time you worked there. And if you lost, you had to fight every weekend. like there's this, that kind of primal, like, why are you fucking here? And that's not just me as a chick. That's every bouncer that started there.
Yeah, right.
Someone would pick you on your first. And they all, like, my first night, they were like, oh, you'll get into at least a decent, like, you personally will get into a fight tonight. And I'm like, okay. All right then.
Brilliant.
Yeah, not just like you have to run in and break one up. Someone is going to pick you in a fight tonight. And if you can handle yourself, they're like, hey, she's our bouncer. Fucking, don't you dare talk to her like that.
Oh, right.
But if you couldn't handle it, and I watched blokes, like, try to talk their way down, like, come on, like, really try to do the right thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, in those...
It's like a trial by fire, isn't it?
Yeah, but in those kind of blokey pubs, you just got to kick off. Otherwise, exactly every weekend, someone's going to do exactly the same thing. And it's that ridiculous mindset. So when you get in those pubs, if a group of fuckheads turn up, the locals are just like, nope, you're not staying. And either they will, like, drag them out or they'll instigate something to get them thrown out. Used to make me laugh.
The whole fighting culture at pubs, I mean, I think it's watered down a bit more now. It's probably pockets.
Like, you wouldn't believe.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. It's so much safer for everybody.
Yeah.
Fuck, when I was a bouncer, there were people getting, like, glassed and stabbed all the time. And it just rarely happens.
Well, I just remember the old tale of, I don't know how much of this was myth, but, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, or whatever it is, and you'd have the schooner glass and you'd turn upside down on the counter at the bar, and that was the indication that I'm ready to fight someone.
Yeah.
And it's just like, but, and for me, like, sort of going, well, why do you want to fight? Like, what happened? No one's done anything. You just turned the glass upside down. But yeah, it's more of a case of, I'm ready to go. I'm juiced up.
That, it's definitely two trains of thought. There's a most people, most sane, normal people that have, like, grown up well-balanced and have sensible educations only fight if it escalates to that, if they have to.
Yeah.
And then there's other people where I might belong in the camp where you're like, oh, we're fighting now. Okay.
it's a bit of a rumble.
Yeah,
you know?
You don't need an escalation. You don't need the argument to turn into something worse. Please, when I say that, I'm lovely now. I'm calm. I've done all the therapy.
Let you into my place. It's like,
done all the therapy. I'm very sweet. I'm a lovely person. It just makes me laugh because that's never far from the surface. And I've really worked on my temper over the years, but it's never far from the surface. So every now and then someone will say something and I'm just like, what did you fucking say? And apparently my face really changes because I see that wee as a reaction.
It's like, oh, Julian, like, yeah. Oh, geez.
I see the head come back and they're like, uh-oh. And it always makes me laugh because I'm like, oh, that's right, because you guys didn't know me back then. I forget.
It must be like just an adrenaline rush or something that just kicks in. Where it's an outlet, you know, to get energy out of the system.
Yeah, and I think, again, God, I'm really bringing my psych degree in today. There is a whole train of thought at that, you know, we have as a species always done really physical work, whether it was hunter-gatherer times or whether it was 30 years ago where labouring was fucking hard and people traditionally had jobs where they were physically tired by the end of the day. And then, you know, automation kicked in and all of a sudden you kind of pressing a button in a machine, in a factory, and you got all that energy that you know, biologically you have been producing, and then you're like, what do I do with it? I don't know what to do with it. I'm going to have to fight. I think if you know, lack of education, she says, and too much of that, you're going to punch fuck out of each other. That's what's going to happen. But I used to love the live band nights for just to get that energy out. Working in a mosh pit was one of my favorite places to be. Because you're literally just keeping... Because I loved my locals. They were really good. They were good people and they loved the bands. The bands always put on the very best show they could. And you literally... We often didn't have a punter barrier. So we just had to stop people from getting pushed forward onto the stage, thus breaking legs and smashing microphones into singers' faces and stuff like that. So we just had to stand at the front and hold them back. And you'd walk out and you'd stink of about 150 people's sweat. You got paid to do it and you got live music kicking off behind you. Like, it was the very best.
Well, it's probably a nice substitute to actually getting into a fight where you've got that adrenaline, energy and just everything surrounded. Like you're stimulated by so much stuff going on around you.
You're burning it all off without actually copping one to the face.
That's pretty good alternative.
It was pretty handy.
How did it work with comedy and, you know, the stereotypical heckler and dealing with dicks in the crowd?
Yeah. I just had this conversation at a gig on Saturday night. So next month it'll be 19 years that I started stand-up. Yeah, I know. Jeez. And you're like, fucking hell, I'm not as young as I once was. And so I started relatively late. I was like 26, 27 when I started. And it was, I must have been 26. And it was rough back then. And chicks, there weren't that many women.
Yeah.
I mean, there were, you know, I certainly am aware that there are women that went before me that made it possible for me to then have gigs. And it was lovely that there was, there's an Indigenous comedian, Steph Tisdall, who pulled me aside at a gig last year and just went, I just always wanted to say thank you. And I was like, no worries, man. I was always coming to the gig. Like, and she goes, no, I want to say thank you because without comedians like you really breaking down barriers and like, because I'll kick off in a green room if someone's being a dick. Like, without people like you really making it safe for women to perform, this would have been much harder for me. And I was like, oh, that was a really fucking sweet thing to say. It had never occurred to me that I owe my debt to like the Rachel Burgers and the Wendy Harmers and the, you know, who did it even tougher than me. But when I started, places like Blacktown RSL on a Wednesday night, when you're an open micer, fuck me. That is a shit fight. And yeah, so you learn to A, not leave any space in your set where you can get heckled, to never ask a question that you don't, you know, you hear comedians go like, hey, so who's done the blah, blah, blah? Never, ever. If you ask a rough crowd a question like that, you're going to get, something's going to come back that you're not ready for. So like, to phrase sets where you don't leave it open for you to cop any kind of like negative feedback.
Yeah.
And also a mate of mine said to me early days, anything that could possibly be perceived as negative about you, just address it at the very top and then take all the power away. They can't heckle you with stuff that you already... So I opened my show by saying, g'day, I'm Julia. I get asked questions all the time. I get asked if I'm gay, if I'm bi, if I'm trans, which is relatively new the last couple of years. Then I get asked if I'm a vegan, and I make fun of the fact that I'm clearly not a vegan. I'm 105 fucking kilos. How could I be a vegan? And then I'm like straight into, if I don't have enough discipline to not suck cock, I don't have enough discipline to not eat meat. Like, boom, straight off. You know what you're getting straight off. And I go, I'm a tomboy who grew up into a tom man. That's who I am. And I just address it straight off, because if I don't address the fact that I'm a unit, and I don't address the fact that I look like a lesbian, I don't address the fact that I'm like, I've got a proper presence on stage, which is a little bit scary sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
People are like, they either are going to heckle, or they're confused, or they're quietly talking to their friend like, do you think she might be a lesbian? Like,
and then they're not paying attention to what
exactly.
you're saying.
Exactly. They can't hear the comedy if they're still trying to work out what the fuck's happening up there. Yeah, so I always, I just like nail it straight from the beginning.
That's a great idea, because I know a lot of mates who love to, they love to throw a joke in or have some commentary about things, and it can be like, and unfortunately been rewarded as the life of the party, but in certain scenarios, they're an absolute pain in the ass to be around. But if you do things like that, they're not going to try and say a joke where you've already addressed it at the start.
Got it. Nailed it. Because they locked in.
You've basically diffused it.
Yeah. I've taken away all your power to say anything mean about me. And A, I know it. B, I said it. And C, I embrace it.
Yeah.
I embrace the fact that I'm a unit. I've actually had to start saying, by the way, I know that I'm a unit, because I talk about chucking a chick out of a pub back in the day. And then I say, please, I'm aware of it. I cultivate it. I do a lot of weights. I eat a lot of beer. Drink a lot of beer, eat a lot of steak, give a lot of blowjobs. Like, I always drop that in to just kind of alleviate this is getting serious, and a little bit of humor in there. I do that to stay this size.
Yeah.
So please don't. It started to happen where chicks would come over after the show and go, oh, darling, don't call yourself a unit. That's quite derogatory. And I'm like, fuck off. Like, I am this size because I want to be. Oh, I'm only 104 kilos. Like, I'm not a fucking massive fat cunt, but I'm a fat cunt. But I'm super strong. And you chuck like this weight behind a very well-placed uppercut. Fucking someone's dying. Like, it's like, I point that out because, you know, people do like to come over after the show and offer stuff. Like, offer, like, oh. I remember talking about pornography on stage one time in London. And this chick came over afterwards and went, you don't really like to watch porn. I went, what? I'm sorry, what? She goes, you don't actually like to watch porn. You just say that you like to watch porn because that's what men think. That's what you think men want to hear. So you don't, like, you should probably just stop saying that. And I was like, no, you can go fuck yourself. I love porn. Like, I watch a lot of porn. And as far as I'm concerned, porn on your phone is the best invention that's ever fucking happened on this planet. The fact that I don't have to load up my computer. When we went from fucking dial-up internet I know. I'm like, this is the best year of my life. And as it is, everybody who knows me knows not to touch my phone because you don't know where it's been. You don't know where it's been. You don't know what it's been up to. Just leave the phone alone. So things like that, like, people love to come up afterwards and just go, oh, you know that you don't really. It's funny because women will offer that. Well, you don't really think that. You don't really like that.
Well,
it's
just as bad as the other side of it. Yeah. Like, you know, and guys calling you out and stereotyping you for somebody else who thinks they're acting in your best interest. Oh, it's just as bad.
They are actually the people I hate the most in society. People who are acting behalf of other people who didn't give a fuck in the first place.
Yeah.
I do a joke about having a sign language interpreter come in to do the show, and every now and then someone will go, you really shouldn't pick on deaf people. I'm like, really? Because deaf people who come to my show fucking love that joke. Why don't you go fuck yourself? Like, I get really, occasionally if I'm in a good mood, I go, well, actually, the joke is actually phrased where I'm the person who didn't understand what was going on. I'm not making fun of deaf people. I'm actually talking about including deaf people in my shows. Every now and then I feel like it's a teachable moment, but sometimes I just go, why don't you just fuck off? Like, just fuck off. I'm finished my show. I've had a good show. I'm having a beer. Just fuck off.
Have you found that, like, you know, where in the past you would have used your physical presence to be able to diffuse situations, but then on stage, I mean, I don't know, maybe you have jumped out into the state, out into the crowd and thrown a hit out or something like that.
I have threatened.
But have you changed it into your...
Even recently.
Have you changed it into, like, into using... Sounds bad, but using your mouth more.
That's what gets me into trouble in the first place. Now, it's funny how much the bouncer skills kick in stand-up, in that you can see where the hecklers are going to come from. Because the lizard brain's paying attention and I'm watching every single person in that room.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've done gigs in South Africa to, like, you know, 3,000 and 4,000 people, and in London to 5,000 people. Like, even then you can see where the unrest, you know, you see someone shifting in their chair too much. They're itching to say something or they're bored or they're getting angry about something. And literally all it takes, because I do a lot of, one of the comedians on Saturday night said to me, one of the younger comedians goes, oh, I just really like the way you just stalk the stage. And I didn't think I did stalk the stage. I thought I was just moving around the stage.
Just pacing, you know.
Yeah, but she was like, no, I watched you. You were like stalking the stage. I was like, oh, okay. And I know that I walk around and I look all around the audience and I make eye contact. Like, so if I see someone who's getting a little bit fidgety or someone who's mumbling to a mate where they're like, watch this, I'm going to say something, just a quick connection of eyes diffuses it immediately. It's amazing how much the bouncer skills kick in. Brain's always working.
Because, I mean, I guess, obviously the actions and the movements, I mean, just body language, the way that people cross their arms and then very obvious things like the guy who's got up like five times in the past 30 minutes to go and pick up five beers from the bar and try and juggle them back. And
I know how this ends.
Yeah, that's right. I know you. But
if I see someone not enjoying it, I don't go out of my way to try and get them.
Yeah.
But often I'll be like, oh, fuck yeah. If you don't like it, just wait for someone else to be on. Like, if you come into my festival show and you don't like it, well, sucked in, mate. You've got an hour of me. Like, that's what's going to happen. And, you know, sometimes when I say mate, that's not necessarily a dude. Like, often women will be like, oh, this is disgusting. Like,
whatever.
Hey, look how your boyfriend's smiling. See how I'm talking about sucking cock? He's smiling and you're hating it. I'm seeing your future and it doesn't work out great for you. Like, I can see how this ends. And every now and then I'll see a bloke, like, nudge his girlfriend, like, see?
Awkward.
I giggle because I see it, and sometimes I'm like, do I want to call that out? I almost always don't because it's just a lovely little joke to myself. I'm like, but if I see someone not enjoying it, if they're just sitting quietly, I'll leave them to it.
Yeah.
But every now and then, I had a gig in the UK, and I was in like Tunbridge Wells or something. It's a really posh part of North London, north of London. And it was an afternoon gig, which are the fucking worst. And it was a really weird room because it was kind of like, you know how there's pockets of Sydney where you've got rich people used to live there, but now working class people have moved in there.
Yeah.
So everyone else in this gig was like normal people. Mm-hmm. And then there was just this pocket of women in the middle who had like pearls and twin sets. And I'm like, did you accidentally walk in here? Like, how are you in the middle of the room?
Ooh, where are we?
But yeah, just like, and they fucking hated every single word that came out of my mouth. I'm in a posh part of the UK with this accent talking about like fucking people and sucking cocks and bashing people. Like, just, you know, it's fucking low to the ground comedy as you can get. It's not intellectual. And they were just hating every word that came out of my mouth. And they started to glare at people. And I was on for like, I think they had like a 30 or a 40 minute set.
Mm.
And so they were glaring at people around them for laughing. And I was like, fuck, this is like a cancer that spreads through an audience.
That's it,
like,
toxic. Yeah.
So you have to, like, I always joke that it's like the comedy blue healer. You've got to just round them up and contain them and get them to shut the fuck up. And so I was like 10 minutes in and I just went, you guys aren't enjoying this, are you? And one of the women just kind of like looked behind her. I was like, don't throw it to the keeper, me. I can see you're just not injured. Yeah, which they probably didn't even understand because even though cricket's an English game, they wouldn't have got it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, come on. Like, I can see you're fucking hating me. And I said, but come on. Let's not pretend we haven't all sucked a cock or two to get where we are in life. And one of the women went, oh, my God. And I said, what, did you buy all that jewellery yourself? Fucking come on. At least I'm just open about me sucking cock for fun. You're doing it for possession. So how about you just rein the face in and calm the fuck down? And the room erupted.
I bet.
And these women were just like, like arms across. They were so angry but couldn't move because they're in the middle of the room. They can't get out.
Yeah.
But they also, at that point, the division had been drawn around them where the people around them were like, every time they glared at someone for laughing, they were like, nah, fuck you. You've already been identified as the people who are going to hate this. And they were never going to like me. I was never going to win them over, but I had to stop them infecting the rest of the crowd.
That's such a great idea because, I mean, if that didn't happen, potentially they may have had some influence over the rows around them.
Yeah. Well, who then have an influence.
If they don't like him, actually, maybe she isn't that good.
Yeah.
But you've just gone, no, basically you're a pack of idiots.
Yeah, yeah. You were never going to like me. Why are you here? Shut the fuck up.
That's it.
Like,
and just, so now everyone looks at them, you know, you're not enjoying the show and going, suck shit. You don't enjoy the show. Yeah. I'm enjoying it.
It's funny how if you've got like a very old person in an audience, people around them often won't laugh very hard because they don't want to be disrespectful.
Yeah.
Even if that old person is full fucking cacking themselves,
they're
like, I don't want to appear to be disrespectful. So I'm not that kind of like, hey, what do you do for a job? That's fucked. Hey, well, I'm just not that. I actually hate that kind of comedy particularly because I tour out in the middle of Australia all the time and everywhere I go I have to deal with like ostentatious was here 30 years ago and he called my mate a faggot and he's never fucking lived it down. Like there's always a comedian that's been out there and made fun of everybody, so I've never done that. But if I see potential for the show to go wrong or for people not to enjoy themselves, I definitely address it. So I always go like, hey, fuck, this is brilliant, like what are you, like 80? And they're like, oh yeah, or however old they are. And I go, fucking hell, that means geez, you've lived through the 60s and, you know, you were young in the, you were in your prime in the 50s and 60s. Fuck, you've sucked more dicks than I'm ever going to see. And the old women always go like, ha, ha, ha. There's always like a knowing laugh. And I go, just so that the people around you don't freak out, you don't mind if I tell some dirty jokes? And that always, they never, like, people that age don't go to comedy. To be
I was
going to
say, like, yeah.
They're always like, you go at it, dar. Like, and so the people around them are like, oh, sweet, thank God for that. Or if there's a very young person in the audience, I always go, hey,
yeah.
How old's this child? 12. Okay, well, you're going to hear some serious shit. And I would think it would be a good idea if you guys just left now. And the parents are always like, no, we've seen you before. We, you know. And I go, okay, well, at the point where it gets too much, if you guys have to leave, if you could just quietly go, I won't say anything, you don't need to say anything, but the people around you need to know that you're okay with what they're about to hear, this kid. And the, you know, oh, yeah, no worries at all. And it's funny how that's all you need is just permission. And the people are like, oh, sweet, okay, we're good to laugh now.
You mentioned psychology before. It's like the psychology of people and crowds as
yeah,
well. Like the influence
amazing.
It can have.
It is amazing. And just I didn't even realize... So back when I was working on The Door, I was just absorbing that and watching that. I didn't even realize until I started to actually study psych that I was like, oh, no, these are actual, like, sociological ideas. Like, these are actual people have written about
this. It would make your job far easier just being able to connect the dots and understand why people act the way that they do. Yeah.
Which, of course, back then.
Yeah.
I was 18 to 28 while I was my bouncer.
Different story back then.
It was like it was a 2-year crossover from when I started stand up to when I finished being a bouncer, because, you know, when you first start, you got to do the hard slog and do all the open mic stuff. We did back then. There was no kind of YouTube comics. And after I started to get work, I started to get paid to do comedy. I was like, you know, the only thing I need to do this gig is to be able to talk. And broken jaw is massively likely in my job. Like, and I'd been 10 years without one.
Wow.
And I was like, nah, I think I might hang up the boots at the 10-year mark. I might, that might be my little retirement party, because it's always on the cards.
Yeah,
and in my mind, the second you start worrying that some particular thing might happen is the second that particular thing happens.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If you, when I'm playing footy, I'm like, fuck, this knee's a bit dodged. I did an ACL a couple of years ago. And you're like, every time you try to protect a particular body part, that's the body part you hurt. Like, it's you know, there's that's some
it.
Part
put
of
put too much focus on it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like throwing a ball and going, don't accidentally hit mum's crystal vase. Don't hit the crystal vase. Don't hit the crystal vase. Bam,
bam.
Fuck, got the crystal vase.
It's almost like you can see your arm just deliberately going in that
yeah,
direction.
Exactly.
Don't hit it, don't hit it, don't hit it.
Yeah. And you're like, I could aim that ball at that vase 100 times and not hit the fucking thing. But the second I start going, don't hit it, it'll break. You'll be in so much trouble. Don't hit it. Like, that's the time it gets Kane.
Need to reverse that in a way to
yeah,
make
absolutely.
It work in your favour. Whatever I do not make money. I hate money.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't want the money, whatever. Oh, I've got money.
Oh,
damn
Jesus,
it.
Where did these millions of dollars come from?
With the comedy stuff, one of the things, I mean, I usually do every time I have someone on the podcast is I try and do a little bit of internet stalking and try and get some stuff together. And I've got to hang so much shit on you because...
Fair.
We're friends on Facebook, and I went on just your little about section first, and you've got your fucking MySpace page there.
I saw that the other day. I was like, how is that still there?
Well, no, I went, oh, this is pretty impressive. Like, you're still maintaining a MySpace.
No,
you're not.
You haven't updated Facebook since I first opened the account 13 years ago. I am the laziest person when it comes to uploading clips, uploading, like, all that kind of stuff. I'm fucking appallingly lazy. Or filming a set and putting it online.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so bad at it. And there was some fuckhead here in the Sydney Comedy Centre. I can't think of his name right now. But he had a crack at me at some fucking thing. You know those internet warrior dudes where you're just like, I've got an idea. Why don't you come and fucking have a chat to me after a gig one night and see how that works out for you?
Not in front of a keyboard.
Yeah. But he went for a solid 24 hours. I was like, I don't want to block you. I will. But I don't want, like, you're embarrassing. He's a comedian. Well, is he a comedian or does he just run rooms? I don't know. But he was, like, really shooting himself in the foot.
Mm.
Like, every writer, promoter, booker and comedian in the world is seeing you do this. Like, I've worked everywhere in the world. Everyone, like, stand out. He's like, look at you still showing off about all the famous people you know. And I was like, dude. And I went to bed, didn't think anything about it. Woke up in the morning. I was like, this cunt has gone on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And one of his insults were, yeah, well, maybe you should update your website since 2008. I was like, really? That's your insult? Fuck me. And I said, I don't think you understand. If I see you, I'm going to end you. Like, I don't think you understand how this goes.
If anything, it's like, well, I'll tell you what. I'm not going to update my website ever again.
Just to piss you off.
Yeah, so watch me.
And also because I'm a lazy motherfucker. Made me laugh though because that very guy, and I can't even think of his name, came over and apologised to me one night after a gig because I didn't know who he was. So when he came over, he put his hand out to shake my hand. And I've never been like that. Oh, someone's extending their hand to me. I need to shake their hand. I'm like, who are you?
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, oh, hey, just want to apologize. Like, I'm that guy who went after you online the last year. And I was like, oh, I should put one on your chin right now. And he goes, like, I can see my big eyes. And he goes, oh, I did check to see that the cameras were on. I was like, oh, cameras aren't going to stop you having a broken jaw, you fuckhead. And he was just like, I saw him go, oh, in that moment, oh, okay. Like, what a stupid thing to say. That's what makes me laugh about old school violence versus kind of escalation violence, where you're just like, no, I don't have to be angry in this moment.
No.
I can just resort to that.
That's it. And I think people sort of think that, you know, they have the ability to clean the slate themselves.
Yeah, yeah. I apologize. I thought,
well, yeah, it's fine.
Everyone deserves a second chance.
Yeah, I'm over it.
So yeah, exactly.
You are. Yeah. Yeah.
And also, the other thing that always makes me laugh is like, oh, no, I have no, like, being awkward in a room does not bother me in the slightest.
Yeah.
So he's like, I just want to apologize. I'm like, okay, I heard your apology. Off you go. And he goes, what? And I went, off you go. And, like, actually dismissed him with a hand motion. And one of the guys sitting next to me goes, that was so awkward. And I was like, I don't think it was. Like, it just didn't occur to me. And then that guy went and sat over there, and it was just like, everyone else was like, holy fuck, is this going to kick off? I'm like, no, I've had my say now. Yeah, like, it really made me chuckle. He ended up leaving because he was so awkward. He was just like, oh, yeah. I'm going to go now. And like, no one said goodbye.
And in the back of his head, all of what he's expecting is that you'll go, oh, hey, that's okay. No worries. All good. Don't worry about it. Hey, we move on.
Should we hug it out and sit down and have a chat? And tell me about your childhood. I'm like, no, fuck off. I have no hesitation in just being awkward. Like, this is weird. So, I remember saying to, sorry, you're about to ask another question, but I remember, you know, Chris Franklin, the comedian.
Yeah, yeah.
So Franklin and Miko, who you had on the podcast a while ago, this is some dude at a bar one night said something super gross, and I just fucking went him. And like, he made a rape joke to a woman that I know was a rape victim, and I went at him. Yeah. Like, I was furious too. Like, it was a proper, you know, when you tear someone's character to pieces, fucking just. And I look over, and both Franklin and Miko are like on their phones while I'm like screaming in this guy's face. And it was, I mean, obviously, if anything kicked off, those two guys are like two of my best comedy friends, and they would have my back no matter what.
Yeah.
But I was like, fuck you, you're a fucking piece of shit, you fucking, like, and just went to town. And I can be, whilst I'm like a big dumb thug, when I do character assassination, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, I was just tearing shreds off this guy. And I kicked it. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Fuck off up over this. It was the boat.
That's a good experience. Just build up that skill set of yours. You know, just keep working.
And so I screamed at him until he left. And then Mick and Franklin both go, oh, geez, that was awkward. And I was like, no, it wasn't. And Mick, Franklin goes, I was looking at my screen. My phone died of battery 4 hours ago. And I was like, you fucking piece of shit. And I was like, people know where they stand with me. It's endearing. And I was like, oh, if you have to scream, it's endearing. Maybe it's not endearing. Yeah. But you always know where you stand with me. If I like you, I really like you. I'm on your team and I'll walk through a wall for you. If I don't like you, get the fuck away from me and go sit at another table. I don't have someone sitting at the pub at my table that I would like never. Like, to me, sitting at a pub having a beer is a really important part of my day.
Yeah.
And I'm not having some fuckhead ruining my vibe, so just go sit at another table.
It's such a, I mean, that's a breath of fresh air, because I think so many people waste so much time and energy just trying to maintain, you know, that just remove the confrontation. I don't want to feel uncomfortable. Oh, I don't want to feel awkward, you know. I don't want that awkwardness.
And also the people pleasing thing, we're like, I don't want to make a scene. And I'm like,
but it's like a band-aid. Just deal with it.
Absolutely.
And then it's done. You've forgotten about it.
And also, like, you know where you stand.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm like, dude, how are you? Have a seat. You know where you stand. Whereas I'm like, get the fuck away from me. Go sit on another table. You know where you're sitting. And it's not with me.
Well, you mentioned Mick before. And I flicked him a message because you know, I did the stalking. I'm like, oh, you haven't updated shit for so long. And so I'm on YouTube. I'm looking at some of the old clips and stuff like that. And there's a bunch of good stuff on there. So I'll chuck stuff online so people can have a look.
I love that guy so much.
Mick's a legend, like, just hilarious. And I'm so glad that I connected with him. But I flicked him a message and said, hey, Julia's coming around for a podcast. you got any little anecdotes or any interesting things I can throw at it? And so here we go. So I figured I'd just read straight from the source. So I've got my phone out here. So first of all, she loves Rollins, musically, mentally, and physically, her dream man.
He is.
So
I adore that man.
I mean, I don't share all of those, but I can understand why, and I'm a big Rollins fan myself. This might take the podcast to the next level, but I think I know a little bit about this. Ask her the Louder Than Jesus, a Judas Priest story, although you mightn't be ready for it. Do you wanna tell that one?
Mick got me a t-shirt that says Louder Than Judas Priest, which I fucking love, and I wear it with like absolute pride. And I love when people go Louder Than Judas Priest, and if I it actually says Julia Wilson Louder Than Judas Priest. So there's a comedy flat up in Brisbane that when you're doing the gigs up there, the promoter puts you up, but you're always sharing with another comedian, and you never know who it's going to be until you get there.
Yeah.
And I go, it was fucking years ago now. And and I arrived and I'm like, hey, it's Julia. Hey, and I hear this, oi. And I'm like, oh, fuck, it's Mick. So we get to share this comedy flat together for a week. And we knew each other, you know, enough, but weren't like great mates. So that's probably 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And and so he had recently got divorced and wasn't in a relationship. And I'm me and constantly look for fresh meat. So I was like... I'm going to tell this story first, Mick, fuck you. I took him, he was like, hey, do you want to go to Sexpo? And I was like, fuck yes, because it was in Brisbane at the time. And he goes, I've always been married while they've been around.
Yeah, right, yeah.
You don't go with your wife to Sexpo unless she's into it.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, what do you reckon? I was like, sure, let's do that. So we're walking around and he was on the footy show all the time at the time. So everyone knew who he was. And no one had a fucking clue who I was. I'd only been doing it a couple of years. And yeah, I've moved up to a headline spot, but no one knows who I am.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm wandering around and I'm like, darling, what do you think about this butt plug? No. What do you think? And he's like, shut the fuck up. Stop it. And people are like, that's that guy from the footy show. And I'm like, babe, what do you think about this anal intruder? Do you think this would be comfortable for you? Like, I reckon I could probably strap this one. He's like, seriously, shut the fuck up. And I had so much fun. He went so red. You know, he's bald. He went so red, the top of his head went red. And I was just having the very best time. Because it started out as just people going, is that Mick Meredith from the footy show?
Yeah.
And once I realized people were looking at him, I was like, oh, here we go. So I was like buying. And the only time that he really didn't mind that was like, I was buying a toy for me. And the chick was like, okay, so you just insert this here and you just rock back and forward. And she was smoking hot, and Mick's like, really? And so once I realized that he was, and she was like, you know, as straight as I am, she was the hottest chick I've ever seen.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Working in a stall at Sexpo, teaching women how to use like different kinds of sex toys. So I was like, cool. So I made all my purchases. We went and watched, you know, the weird shit that happens at Sexpo. We both had gigs that night in separate places. And I picked up two army guys because I'm a lady. I took them both back to the comedy flat. And I text Mick ahead of time going, it's going to get weird. Probably don't want to be around for this. So he went to his room, put his headphones on and was blaring Judas Priest. And I'm fucking two guys in the next room making what I thought very subtle, quiet noises. But it turns out.
Clearly not.
The next day I get up and I'm like, Mick, are you in there? And he goes, are they gone? I said, yeah, mate. I said, I'm making pancakes. Do you want some? He goes, how do you go from fucking two army guys to making me pancakes? I'm like, oh, you just, I'm done with them. I had some sleep and now I'm hungry. Like, it makes perfect sense to me.
It's logical.
Yeah. I'm like, what does one have for breakfast after a threesome? I'm not sure. Like, I didn't know that there was an etiquette to these things. So we're making pancakes and he's like, fuck me. I had Judas Priest on and I could hear you through Judas Priest. And I'm like, would you say I'm louder than Judas Priest? Which I take as a huge compliment.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, there's no part of me went, oh my God, could you hear me? Oh my God, you knew I brought home two men. Oh my God, that's so, I was just like, fucking get in. Like, a fool. Like, fully loving it. So when he gave me the t-shirt, I'm like, oh, best that's present so anyone has funny. Ever given me.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Unless you're my parents, in which case they're like, do you have to tell people things like that?
Wear the t-shirt around your parents.
Yeah,
like, oh,
it made me laugh, because dad said to me, why would you be louder than Judas Priest? I'm like, Dad, you've heard me. Fucking hell, you can hear me from the other side of Sydney. And Dad's like, yeah, fair point. But he didn't know in what context you can hear me from the other side of Sydney. Just that I'm like, my mum is quite deaf. And one of my millions of jobs that I've had, I can drive trucks and buses and front end loaders and stuff like that. And one of the jobs I had a couple of years back while comedy was a bit quiet was I was driving like minibuses of old people to shopping centres and stuff like that.
Okay,
and I had this one really posh nursing home that they used to hire me to drive there. And it was like a K and a half down the road, take them to St. Ives shops, wait for them and then help them all back on the bus. And, you know, technically I wasn't meant to be carrying any shopping or helping anybody, but there's no way you can watch a 90-year-old woman struggle onto a bus and not help. And I always used to say, and the bottom step was always a really big step. And I used to go, you know, here, I just use my arm. It's okay. I'm a footballer and no point having 105-kilo chick here if you're not going to. And they'd always be like, oh, you are quite firm there, aren't you? Like, they was always like, they used to enjoy, like, and we'd always be joking. And, you know, well, I've got a lovely grandson. And I was like, oh, really? You're thinking, if only you knew. But I would be talking in the minibus and everyone in that bus could hear me.
Yeah, right, yeah.
I'm facing the windscreen talking.
Your
so
voice
that the
is projecting off the windshield.
You can hear me fucking everywhere. And my mum refuses to wear her hearing aids and she goes, it's because you talk so quietly. I'm like, no one in the history of fucking time has ever said that, mum. No one has ever said, Julia, you're speaking too quietly. Can you speak up, please? Ever. Not at school, not on stage. I was doing a gig a while ago. Where was I? Just after COVID came back. And the microphone shit itself. And I literally just went,
oh, well.
Yeah, and it was like a theatre. Oh, it was Camden Theatre, somewhere, like a decent size, and it shit itself. And before the sound tech could run out with another one, I was just like, I moved the microphone to the side and just like proper boon and just went, you guys can all hear me, right? And everyone at the very back went, yep, clear as. I was like, I just feel like it's a prop anyway, and blah, 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 and just finished the set. And when I finished the sound guy, I was like, fuck, man, thanks for that. Like, you really covered my ass. I was like, all right. I mean, I couldn't do it for 40 minutes, but those little showcase ones where you're doing 10 minutes at a time, fuck. You'd be able to hear me a mile off.
So every time I hear Judas Priest, then I've
got an interesting... That's my goal, is to quietly infiltrate everybody's brain every time you hear Judas Priest, you'd be like, listen, fucking two army dudes.
So funny, so funny. What else has he got here? He's got, she's my go-to mate for any heavy music concert.
Yeah,
I bought two tickets. I buy two tickets and she gets on board even if she's never heard of them. Trust my loud music judgment.
Yeah, he's my point man for that kind of stuff. If he goes, this is a good band, I'm like, I'm there. I don't care if I've never heard of them at all.
Yep.
So Pennywise played at my pub years and years ago, and they were fucking great. And he said to me, 2-3 years ago now, hey, Pennywise are playing, should we go? I'm like, I'm on board.
Yeah.
And then we got there, and the Bronx, the support band I'd never heard of, were fucking amazing. Yeah, wiped the floor with Pennywise. So much so that, like, I think we left with 2 or 3 songs of Pennywise to go because it got boring.
Yeah.
The Bronx were just the highlight. They were so good. Mm. And I was just like, oh, it's great. That's one of the things I love about comedy. We all love music. It's pretty rare to find a comedian that doesn't give a shit about some genre of music.
Yeah.
And tour buses are a great place for people to go, oh. So a mate of mine put me onto Slave Metal. I'd never heard of that before, a tour about 3 years ago. I'm like, that's brilliant. Another mate of mine put me onto, what are the New Zealand kids who sing in Maori?
Oh, Alien Weaponry?
That's them. Yeah. Fucking hell. I was just like, that is amazing shit. I don't understand a single word they're saying.
Yeah, no,
but I'm loving it. So
it's good. Yeah.
That kind of stuff. I'm like, oh. And what I love with things like... Like, I try to do, like, the most ethical purchasing of music that I can. I try to put as much money in the pockets of the artists as I can. So things like Spotify, I'm like, I don't know ethically how much they get paid.
Mm. Yeah, not much.
But equally, I love to hear new music. The only kind of upside of things like Spotify is that I'll discover bands I've never heard of before. Yeah. Then I make sure I go and buy their entire album from their site, or I make sure I go. Right. I don't go through Spotify. I go through their sort of thing. But sitting on a tour bus and just going, "Hey, here's my Spotify. Just load me up a playlist. Yeah. Like, just pick the stuff that you like." And they're like, "Whoa!"
Oh, cool.
And I discover genres I'd never heard of Slave Metal before.
Yeah.
I'm like, this shit's amazing. It's just so like visceral, like that build up. And
who
then
was
the...
talking about that a while. Oh, Cam Knight was talking.
It was
about
Cam
that.
Who put me onto him. That's who it was. Who put me onto him? I'm like, holy.
Yeah, he's all over it. Yeah.
Oh, that's one of the things I love where you're just like, what are you listening to at the moment? And Body Count, I put out an album like 2017 or 2018 was their most recent album.
A couple years ago,
And I'd forgotten about them. And someone's like, you used to like Body Count back in the day. I was like, yeah. And they're like, well, have a listen to this. I was this is brilliant. It is such a good album.
So good.
Like, especially, you know, comedians, we talk a lot, and in a tour bus, you get kind of two kinds. People are just sitting there and they're like, I've got to go to the gig. Yeah. And other people are like, oh, I'm so happy to be out of the house. Blah, 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 blah. But every now and then it gets a little bit much for you. You just want to pop your earbuds in and just listen. You sit and listen to like crazy shit in the tour van where you're discovering stuff. And I remember like Cam going, you know, you'd love this. Said pop, you know, have a listen.
Mm.
Put it in my headphones, and I was just like, oh, and I had the big eyes, and Cam's like, see what I'm talking about? This is what I'm talking about. It's fucking brilliant.
There's such a rush where you're able to pass a recommendation on to somebody else and you see them light up.
Yeah.
And you go, yes, I got it. I got it. It doesn't always work, but when it does, oh man, it's so good. So good. What else did he write here? Her dad is a pretty famous sports journo. Great stories there.
Yeah, he's hilarious, my dad. He's super crook at the moment and he's on so much medication that when I wake him up in the morning to see how he's going, he's sort of in between sleeping off heavy drugs being in a fair bit of pain. And the shit he comes out with at the moment, I'm like, okay, Dad, rightio. Because my whole life I've listened to these amazing stories about when, you know, this famous cricketer did blah, blah, and this famous tennis person. And he can tell a story like I can drink beer. He's amazing.
Yeah, right, yeah, cool.
And he's lived a life. Like, you know, he's 89 now, so he's born in 31. He was a journo in his 20s and 30s. And in Sydney, you know, sports people were our fucking A-listers back
then.
Yeah,
like, definitely.
So just amazing, cool shit, running with like the big boys, running with the rough crowd. Great stories.
Yeah.
And now, so I reckon I know all of those, but now he's like, he pops out with, like the other day, he goes, "Did I pass?" I go, "What, Dad?" He goes, "Did I pass the test?" I go, "What test?" He goes, "Oh, there's a kid." Oh, no, he didn't say kid to start off with. "There's a person that I'm somehow affecting. They have to sit a test every morning, and if they get it right, they get a blue T-shirt. And if they get it wrong, they get a yellow T-shirt." And I'm like, "Yeah, those drugs are pretty good, eh?" And he's like, "But today I had to sit the test." And I was like, "Okay." Ooh. He goes, "Did I pass?" I'm like, "What colour shirt are you wearing?" He goes, "My pajamas." And I'm like, "Sounds like you didn't finish the test." Like, I did. Like, you just kind of, you just run with it. Like,
you can't.
That's what high-powered medication's for. Yeah, like, you know, it's so you don't feel all the pain, but also kind of fucks with your brain a little bit. And so I said to him, "So who's the person that's doing the test?" And he goes, "Oh, you know." I'm like, "No, that's what I'm asking." And I go, "Is it a boy or a girl?" And he goes, "You know, it's that bloke." And I'm like, "Okay, so it's a guy." And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "The kid." And I go, "Like a little kid?" He goes, "No, the young bloke." I'm like, "All right, okay then." Like, and then an hour after he's up and about and walking around, had a shower, he's like, "Oh, God, I was talking some shit this morning, wasn't I?" Like, okay, welcome back. And he's hilarious. Like, he's quite ill, but just the shit he comes out with. So the other day he goes, "Oh, fuck, I'm dying for a coffee." And I said, "Dad, of all the things you're dying from, I don't think a coffee is one of them." And he's like, "That's my girl." Like, you're really proud. Like, we've got that level of humour, that level of kind of, like, we
that's where it comes from.
Yeah, I've been his carer for years, like 7-8 years now. Mm. And it's like, it's just, you can say stuff when you're that close, whereas if you weren't that close, it sounds like a really mean thing to say to somebody. You're not dying of wanting a coffee, actually, father. Whereas, like, he and I bounce off each other all the time. It's heaps of fun.
Oh, it's so funny. It's so funny. Mentioned before, but oh no, hang on, sorry, I'm skipping here. This is a really good one. Talks herself up as a good singer, but I've never heard of.
First of all, I don't talk myself up as a good singer. I say I went to music school doing vocals and guitar.
Very different.
Yes,
very different, Mick. Rep gridiron player. So you mentioned you played a bit of American football.
Yeah, that was heaps of fun.
And then he sort of trailed off there, but he wrote wedding celebrant, loves a cigar.
Oh, fuck.
And cries at unexpected girly stuff.
It always surprises me when I cry at unexpected. I'm like, what's... Oh, fuck, I'm crying. What is going on here?
Yeah,
what
is this?
It's hilarious because I'm like, I'll be fine. I honestly can watch someone get flogged to within inches of their lives and go, "Man, he might have said something about that bloke's mum. I don't really care."
Yeah.
Or I watch Lassie come home and bore my fucking eyes out. I'm like, "Lassie, does Lassie make it up?" Like, it's, you know, it makes me giggle at the weird shit that I'm like. And there was a time where I was like, "I don't fucking cry, whatever."
Yeah.
Whereas now I'm like, "Ah, looks whatever. Like I'm crying. This is what we're doing now.
It is what it is. I mean, we don't know what this year's going to look like as far as... doing anything, but it appears that for the most part, apart from sort of brief little temporary lockdowns that we have, comedy's been able to sort of hover a little bit.
Yeah,
and sort of tail
I mean, I'm
end
still
of the
working.
Year.
I'm still paying the bills, which is nice. I did two shows on Saturday night at Gosford, and there was an early show. It was like 5:30, which is a weird time of the day to be doing comedy. Well, it's broad daylight outside, and I'm like, "So I'm sucking this cock." Like, it's weird. It's a weird. And I literally, I'm on stage. The audience can't see it, but I'm on stage, and I can see the outside. I can see daylight, and I was just like, "This joke is not a daylight joke. This is a 10 o'clock at night joke."
There's not enough people here day drinking at the very least. Yeah.
But for the first time, everyone had to have a mask on. So we didn't as the performers, but all of the audience had to have masks on. And
that's
just
weird.
Yeah, it was weird. It was proper weird.
So really you look in everyone's eyes to see how they're reacting to something.
Yeah, I was like pretty grateful for lizard brain being able to read people's body language because I think if you don't have lizard brain, you're literally just relying on like that, like eyes, and that's it.
I mean, that could be really off-putting. It could just throw you off completely.
Yeah. And it was funny because there was the comedians who did really well, and the comedians that only got like half a laugh, like that, the face mask muffled that, so it kind of like the divide between who killed and who didn't. Yeah, it was pretty big. I was like, "Oh, this is interesting." Like, it just brings a whole new dynamic to what the audience are thinking. I was having a ball. I was just like, I literally walked on stage and I'm like, "I feel like I'm at a conference for fucking stagecoach robbers." Like, it's just weird. Like, everyone had these big things across. And they were like, and then one guy, I think it was the second show, one guy was talking and I was like, "Dude, it's a mask, not a fucking cone of silence. Shut up." Like, because he was talking through his mask and he thought he had to talk louder because he had a mask on. But like, your mate is sitting 8 inches away from your face.
Yeah.
You fucking idiot.
That's so funny.
Made me chuckle.
So, okay, so this will come out in a couple of weeks, but...
I needed to ask.
Yeah.
You told a story on Mick's podcast about you going for some kind of medical test.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember what it was.
He's come back for a prostate exam.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was the result? You never told the result on thing. And I was like, oh, my God, are you dying or not?
No, well, I mean, that was quite a few years ago. I'm still here. But no, it just came back clear, I guess. There was nothing. There's nothing at all.
I
think it was a big false alarm.
I was driving. I was doing a gig in Dubbo that weekend. So I was driving from Sydney to Dubbo and I was listening to the podcast and I was like, Andy, resolution, what happened?
I just got distracted, trailed off. Anyway.
I know you were talking about like things up the arse and I was like, yes, I'm on board. That's hilarious. But what happened in the end?
Well, you're the only person who's followed up afterwards to check in on me. So thank you so much.
I care. See, I'm a nice person.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you just redeemed yourself after all that bash talk, you know, bashing people up. And, yeah, no, I don't know. I mean, obviously it wasn't, I think I was more traumatised by the fact that I didn't know
what was about to happen.
Well, yeah, I had no idea and obviously overreacting to the situation, just thinking it's sort of like the equivalent now where, oh, well, nowadays it's like if I've got a cough, I must have COVID, you know.
My dad got rushed to hospital 2 weeks ago and I had to do some fast. We were in the southern northern beaches, so we're the part that like we were in lockdown. I had to do some fast talking to get dad into the hospital that he normally goes to.
Yeah.
Because they were like, no one from this area can go to that hospital. Yeah. And I'm like, that's where all his records are. It's where all his doctors are. If you take him to the new hospital, no one knows who he is up there. He's got no form and he's got such a complex medical history. So I did some fast talking. They were like, okay, we'll take him, but you can't come. And I wasn't allowed in for a week. And I was like, fuck. So I had to take some stuff up and drop it at the door. And the lady literally, when I said, hey, I'm from Balgala and I'm aware. And she just went, please stop walking towards me. Like, hand up. Like, please stop. And I was like, okay. I said, I've got, like, pajamas and shit that dad's going to need. And she's like, cool, I'll take that up. Which I think is kind of, if I've got it and I'm touching things, then.
Well, but, yeah,
you
know,
I genuinely appreciate that they took the stuff up to dad. But I thought, if I go get a COVID test now, because there's a testing spot right there at the hospital, then maybe when they release the restrictions, maybe I'll be allowed in with, like, a, hey, I've got an okay, I don't have COVID. So I went to have, and it's the only test I've had for COVID. And they scratch the back of your throat and they scratch your nose. And then the next morning I woke up with a dry, itchy cough and my nose was running. And I'm like, I've got fucking COVID. And it's the irony that the thing that they did to test for COVID is the thing that made me think I had COVID. I was like, motherfuckers, they've given me fucking COVID. I'm going to kill my fucking parents.
Give me a dirty swab or something like
that. Can't just fucking use a fresh one. It can't be that hard. I was probably like half a day. Now, granted, dad was in hospital and I couldn't go and help. So I was probably projecting somewhat. But there was lots of like, fucking idiots, Jesus, fuck, walking around my house.
I mean, there's so much paranoia, isn't there? And up until probably a year ago, the equivalent was, yeah, I've got a cough or whatever, and you go on Google and most things just lead to cancer. Yeah. It's like, oh, my life's over, you know, so it's that sort of thing.
Yeah, in my 20s and early 30s, I was like, I've got AIDS every single time. You know, I've done this time I've got AIDS. I've got AIDS for sure this time. I've got AIDS. I've got a girlfriend of mine and I who we go and get like annual sexual health checkups. To this day, when we get an all clear, we literally high five and just go, woo! Dodged another bullet. Like we are 45 years old and we're still high-fiving over getting like all clears.
Another year without AIDS.
Right. Yeah. Another year without anything. I don't know how it happens. I'm 45 and I've been sleeping around my entire adult life, bar the couple of serious relationships that I've had. And I'm like, how? How has this happened? How has none got through to the cat? Like, I don't understand. But I'm like, yeah, full fucking touching wood. And I still, you'll be listening, Eliza Sloan. I still maintain she looks like Kylie Minogue. Like I should not get more action than she does, but to this day, touching wood, A, haven't got AIDS, B, got better stats than her, so I'm like, ha, 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 suck it.
Well, I think let's end on a high note.
Of me having better stats.
Alrighty, now, although Julia does admit that she doesn't update her social media pages and her website too often, she has assured me that she does post on Facebook, so go to Facebook, search for Julia Wilson. I will have links to that and everything else that we spoke about in the show notes over at andysocial.net and andydowling.net. In the show notes themselves, I will have some YouTube videos of a comedy, so you can check out a comedy. And anything else I can do that's linked into Julia, I'll chuck in there so you guys can get a taste of her her comedy. Although I've got a funny feeling after listening to that episode, you probably got a taste of it already. Pretty good stuff. Of course, everything will be on the podcast player, whatever the hell you're listening to this through right now. So click on the show notes or the description. There should be a bunch of clickable links in there. Reach out to Julia, say hello, let her know what you thought of the podcast. I'm sure like everybody who's been on the podcast over the past 5.5 years would be absolutely stoked to hear from you and get your feedback. So there you go. Before we wrap it up, of course, Patreon, patreon.com/AndyDowling. I always crap on about it, but I'm just pumped. I love it. I'm obsessed with it. It is the reason why Andy Social exists in 2021. I'm just so happy and motivated and inspired
And it's because of these legends who've jumped onto Patreon and support me and support us from only $1 a month. And I'm really pumped to get as many $1 supporters as possible this year. I want to build a tribe of people, a community, and people that sort of back your boy Andy and Andy Social in 2021. So there are a bunch of people already over there. If you want access to the exclusive Patreon podcast that comes out every Tuesday morning, 6 a.m. Sydney time as well, which has got a bit of karaoke, some story time, some dumb shit from your mate Andy, just a bit of fun. It's a bit of lighthearted humor. You can get that with any additional tier on the Patreon page. So that's patreon.com/AndyDowling. And for the month of January, I'm just doing a quick run through the Patreon list to say thank you to these legends. And it starts with Ryan from Adelaide, Andrew from Perth, Mick G from Sydney, Ash from Deniliquin, Dan from Dapto, Riley from Sydney, the Toe Hider guys from Melbourne, Lords of the Trident from Madison, Wisconsin, Sean from Oregon in the US, Johnny from South Australia, Zach from Adelaide, Rod from Rayleigh in North Carolina, Matt from Adelaide, Saul from Oxford in the UK, Patrick from Canberra, Liam from Brisbane, Tom from Melbourne, Chris from Sydney, Frank from Altengruppenbach in Germany, Lewis from Ellie Beach, Turner from Armidale, Samantha from Sydney, Brando from Leeton, Tim from Canberra, I've got to catch my breath. James from Brisbane, Bradley from Canberra, Sean from Melbourne, Kurt from Brisbane, Jason from Adelaide, Christian from Canberra, Cole from Port Kembla, and Jordan from Bendigo. Thank you so much, legends. You guys are the reason why this is all happening and continuing to happen. 5.5 years later, I see no signs of slowing down or stopping or anything. This is a part of my life. I absolutely love it. And Patreon just ensures that we stay strong, the strength of the podcast. So thank you so much, guys. And please, by all means, go and check it all out over at patreon.com/AndyDowling. Now, next episode, later this week, the next episode coming out is another Australian musician, a fantastic musician, if I can even fucking speak English properly, a musician and someone who I've known for quite a few years. He is a dedicated supporter of Australian music. He's been putting together documentaries. He's played in a million bands himself, and I'll leave it at that. But just I'm really looking forward to sharing that great conversation with you guys later this week. So until then, folks, take care and ta-ta. Larry, please.